Welcome to a brand new episode of The Football Corner, Mancha's very own home for all things football. My name is Vikram.
My name is Shreyas.
If you guys are new or old, you can catch us wherever you get your podcasts, Google, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, and more.
And don't forget to follow us on all social media. That's at Mancha Podcasts.
So we have a pretty exciting episode lined up, and we're two pretty excited fellows recording this episode because the Premier League is back, finally, and it's back with a bang. While we speak, there are 37 matches going on, and we're probably going to miss out on a few of those results. But yeah, it's blink and miss every day. There are just an amazing lineup of matches, and with the La Liga back and Italian League back, it's all full swing, and life seems good again. So Shreyas, we cannot possibly deep dive into each and every game that's happened because this is not a long form audio broadcast. It's a nice concise podcast. So the matches that have happened, the highlights of them include I think City and Arsenal on the first day. There was United and Tottenham as well. There's a bunch of interesting stuff that's happened. But before talking about the football, can we talk about everything that's happening around the football? By which I mean the experience of watching football. It's pretty unique. We were used to watching Bundesliga happening just without anyone in the stadium or anything. I think they experimented with crowd noises a little bit. Very hit and miss and very half-assed as I would imagine, because it was not as loud as if it felt like there was an actual crowd, but it wasn't as soft as if it felt as if it was kind of in the middle. So I wasn't too happy with it. But the Premier League has seemed to sort of embrace this crowd noise phenomena, albeit it's rather inconsistently. So before we dive into anything, what do you think about the crowd noise experience?
No, first of all, I think you're being way too hard. People are struggling, and it's just like sport is trying to put a smile on people's faces, and we're trying to achieve some sense of normality. And here you are, and this is not great, but this is so inconsistent. So I think that's extremely unfair of you.
No, like, let me clarify. I firstly love football's back, which is amply clear. Secondly, I'm all for stadium noises. I've heard a lot of talk about stadium noises being weird because everyone's like, some people are like, oh, you know, you hear the noise, but then you look at the stand and it's empty and it feels weird. None of that for me. I'm all for stadium noises. I'm all for fan noises, fan sounds and all of that, crowd noise, whatever you want to call it. But keep it consistent. If you start the game and you play for the first 20 minutes, you play it at a proper level. Keep it at the proper level. Don't pull back. Which is, for example, what happened in the Tottenham's United match, where for 1 minute, I couldn't hear myself think because the crowd noise was so loud. And then all of a sudden, while United was taking a corner, I could hear Harry Kane talk, of all people, the guy who I can't understand at all. I can hear him talk to his teammates. So keep it going, man. Like, I don't get that. I'm all for it, but like, keep it consistent. So I'm throwing it to you again. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think they've got bigger issues to sort. But no, I think overall, I think it's absolutely fundamental. I think as a spectator sport, whether in person or especially on a screen, just because seeing, you know, the biggest of the big clubs play, the Bayern Munichs, the Dortmunds, you know, to see Sancho and Haaland and freaking all these crazy ass players, but without the atmosphere that a crowd can bring was so weird. It seemed to have or has an effect on, you know, players' motivations. Obviously the dynamics of refereeing is slightly different and all of that jazz. So I'm sure the players are psychologically trying to compensate for it, but in terms of us viewers, I think it's so fundamental to have some sort of noise. Maybe I'm not, you know, I don't. We don't have the spoils and the riches to choose consistency. I just want something, and I've got that, and that's all I need. So maybe it wasn't not as a parent, but not a parent at all, you know, everything that you mentioned, because I was just so engrossed in the game. And in fact, if I were to replay that particular segment and if I hear Harry Kane talk, I'll actually be like, oh my God, this is so cool. I can hear Harry Kane like barking out orders. Instead of saying, oh, the crowd is not high enough, hence I can hear him. So I'm just coming from a different place, and you know, like beggars can't be choosers. So I'm just happy there is any form of crowd noise.
Okay. Wow, you made me sound like an idiot. That's not what I was talking about. I'm more than happy to listen to Harry Kane talk, but if that's it, then I want to hear him talk the entire game. Don't make this like crowd come and back and go back again. Also, moving on. The other thing which I found a little weird about the viewing experience was, firstly, as to be expected, the Football Association has realized, or clubs have realized, that because there's no one sitting in the stands, they have much more real estate to throw up advertising on. I get it. That's great. You need to earn the money back for people who've lost out because of no football. And that's the only reason football is running at such a high level. I get it. But there have been entire stands or rafters where they've sort of had these messages written.
Branding messages.
I don't even know if they're branding messages, because they don't go with any of the brands that were next to those messages. So, for example, I think in Tottenham United, I saw "Can't smile for you," which I don't know if that's... it feels like off the cuff. It feels like it's something to do with like some sort of non-profit, like some sort of messaging there, but nothing else to indicate what it was about. And then I feel like in City Arsenal, or one of the first games that happened, I remember watching, or I remember seeing "We aren't here" written there. as if you're indicating to a person that, listen, crowd noises hai, par log nahi hai. I don't know why it's fascinating to me. I should just be watching the football, but sometimes your eyes just go there because it's like right there. If you throw the ball to a left wing back or something, that's the first thing that my eye goes to when it says "we aren't here." It's like Sixth Sense or something. Ooh, we aren't here. I don't get it, dude. I don't get it. And the other thing, last complaint. Fans on camera. Fans on, great initiative. All right. You're allowing people who are proper fans of a club to enjoy the experience some more than other fans, by having their live feeds part of essentially like a extended Zoom call, and sometimes it's thrown on the big screen in the game, which I'm sure is distracting. But what I find the weirdest about it is when their team actually scores the goal, it's not natural. The celebration is not natural, because the fan that you would expect to be celebrating like an idiot because he's surrounded by fans, or she's surrounded by fans, is doing a slightly awkward "yay," and then naturally their eyes go to their laptop camera, and then it goes back to the screen, and then it's such an awkward experience. Like I cringe every time like that stuff comes on screen, dude.
I mean, yeah, I think this whole concept of figuring out a new normal, I think in the football aspect, or specifically the Premier League, is just been a comedy of errors.
I'm happy they're trying stuff, man. Like you only learn by trying. So I'm glad they're the ones who are taking the initiative and trying all these things, like the German League and the Italian Coppa Italia that we saw. I mean, they weren't even trying that much. So I'm glad they're trying. They'll get to a point which kind of works. It's just fun watching them fail right now. It's just so much fun.
Yeah, and also, like you said, I think it's something that pulls, you know, eyes, or specifically your eyes. I saw the exact same matches and probably the exact same moments, but these things didn't bother me at all. So I'm sure you're a unique case, and if there'll be
I'm dissecting it with a deeper lens because I have much more love for it.
Oh, of course, that is your conclusion. How dare I say otherwise? No, but I mean, whatever this is will be literally for a few months. So it's just about us sucking it up and just enjoying what's on show. And
happy to do that. Yeah.
Right. They're already figuring out if they can get fans back to the stadiums start of next season, which should be in and around September. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too, man. And also, I think in a few other leagues, they're still figuring out if they can get some fans back into the stadium within this season as well. So I'm excited that they're making progress. And overall, just kudos to UEFA, FIFA, and all of these specific leagues to just get their act together and figure out a way to sort of get football back to all its fans and communities that appreciate it. So awesome job there. I'm pretty happy that it's back. One thing that's also back because of football or because of the EPL is fantasy football. Shreyas, remember that? Do you remember fantasy?
Yeah, of course. Sure. I mean, I required a phone call here or there, but...
You're welcome.
Yes.
So just for anyone who's listening and to clarify what we're talking about, they came up with some really fantastical changes. So, for example, it's as if you were starting a season afresh for these remaining game weeks. Just redo your pick, repick your team essentially, and no problems there. You can start over, and it was a lot of fun. What wasn't fun was I think in India here we had a 9:30 p.m. deadline, and I found out at 5 p.m. and this is something that both Shreyas and I, happy to admit, take multiple days to sort of come to a conclusion for. And out of the goodness of my heart, I called Shreyas up and I told him that, listen, this is the scene and you owe me for life. And so he owes me for life, and we have that on record. And I ended up making my team. Now I'm sitting in our TFC league. I'm sitting in an unfortunate position. I'm not even mid. I'm slightly below mid, which I completely forgotten about, obviously. Completely escaped my brain. I think I was at 7th before the restart. Right. So what does Vikram think? Vikram thinks that, listen, everyone's going to be, because it's a City double weekend, everyone's going to be making De Bruyne a captain. So I was like, if I make De Bruyne a captain, which I easily could have done, I already have in my team, I won't need a lot of reshuffling or selling players or whatever, I'm just going to be at par still. I'm still going to be at the 7th position. So what can I do to leapfrog people? What can I do completely left field, which if it fails, it's going to fail so spectacularly. But if it succeeds, I'm just going to all of a sudden wake up in like 3rd or 4th position. So I was like, hey man, Arsenal's playing double weekends. And Aubameyang has something to prove because of all of this contract and all of that. So he is going to be fired up, right? Although one of those games is against City, but still, he's a striker. He can get a goal. And then the next game's against Brighton. Oh my God, that's a hat-trick right there. So I'll make Oba my captain.
Just to quickly interrupt you there, you should have seen what Brighton did to Arsenal in the first leg. Anyways, carry on.
Yeah, no, I obviously did not. And we're recording this after Brighton versus Arsenal's already happened. And Arsenal basically lost both their games to Brighton 2-1 in the 2019-20 season. I have a sum total of 8 points from my captain, Aubameyang, who's played 2 games, by the way. So, essentially, got 2 points from each game. And a round total of 8. And instead of 7th, I now sit on 8th. So, just in my table. So, just in a nutshell, my advice is, listen, don't always keep throwing left field choices out there. It's the net effect of it is going to be negative.
Yeah.
Add De Bruyne as my captain, I would have been a very happy 6th position most likely right now. So that's my fantasy season in a nutshell this week and each week that has ever been, and most likely weeks to follow till the end of this season. Shreyas, how's your fantasy weekend been so far?
So actually I didn't have too much of a hard time making those free transfers despite the deadline catching up to me, because I was out all day and I managed to sit down literally like probably an hour or two before the deadline. I didn't require too much of shuffling. The only thing was that this is the only game week where teams play double. Every other game week, teams are playing only one match. So just as a short term versus a long term, because I didn't have time for a long-term strategy, that I just bolted on obviously Man City players, maybe Arsenal I considered, Sheffield for sure. Lundstrom has to be a mainstay if he's not already on your team. So he was already there. I picked up probably a player or two more. And then the next consideration was automatically United players, because they have one of the easier schedules compared to the rest of the top six. So yeah, it's not too bad for me. I'm doing okay. I wish I had at least half a day or a day more to set my teams for the remainder of the season. But I'm happy where I'm at, and I'm miles ahead of you, like I'll always be. So I'm good.
Nice, huh? Played it like a true gentleman. Just one blunder I had with my captain.
Right.
I actually had a pretty decent team that way. Even like what I tried to do was not to... I still have the free hit available, and I'm hoping that some double weekends do come up because of like FA Cup or something like that, where I can utilize it. But overall, I'm pretty happy with my team too. I put a lot of my eggs in the United basket. I know I shouldn't have, especially when they were playing Spurs, but I feel like they have a pretty decent fixture list for the remainder of the season. And Fernandez already paid off. We got 9 points from him. But I have faith in Rashford as well. He hasn't played for a while, and he's always been sort of explosive whenever a season starts or restarts. He's been at his peak. One of the bigger reasons I ended up dropping Vardy, because Vardy starts a little slowly, just like kind of Kane does.
Right.
So I didn't see the point of keeping him in my team.
I mean, talking about Kane, since we've already mentioned him barking out orders, I think the linesman was more involved in the game than Kane was yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that was seemed like it was by design. Now, because of Kane's match fitness levels or overall Spurs levels, I think it was the best game plan that Jose could have picked. If they tried to attack, then they probably wouldn't have done much damage. So it seemed like it was poor design. It seemed like it was a Real Madrid-esque Jose time counter-attacking team, except Cristiano Ronaldo was Steven Bergman. kind of worked, though. Kind of worked. I liked it. So, yeah, that's where we are. Other things that I wanted to touch upon was Sheffield got dropped off like a blatant 3 points in the first game because of some technological issues, if I may.
Yeah, and that just literally came out of nowhere. For all the stuff that's been said and debated and, you know, discussed, etc. about VAR and the fact that it's still in the nascent stage and it's going to take some time, it'll evolve, you know, etc. Sheffield very clearly head the ball over the line, and what exactly happens is the keeper catches it, but in his momentum literally walks or jumps back into goal. And because he's attached to the left side, you can really see that he is leaning on the net off the left side of the goal post.
Yeah.
And obviously the left side is sinking outside because of the weight of the keeper. And that can only happen if he's behind the pole. Yeah. So
okay, it was clear to see. And let's not even blame like around referees and all of that. This is the first time goal line technology has kind of failed, because goal line technology is so binary.
Yes
or no. There is no like gray area to it. If the balls cross the line, it's a goal. It comes on your watch. If your watch doesn't say anything, it's not a goal. So the referee is not to be blamed because his watch didn't go off.
Absolutely. Now,
someone at the back end has forgot to switch on goal line technology as like a thing. I mean, that's a level of fail that is not, I guess, like 3 months, and then people are just like, oh, yeah, button be the on karna hota hai. And then it's like, you completely forgot to do it. That's exactly what happened.
I mean, it is supposed to be black and white. Yes, it is absolutely 1-0. There is no 0.5, there is no gray area. However, they did confirm that it was fully functioning and it was working. And the referee did say, look, it doesn't matter whether I saw it or not. He was pointing to his watch. If I don't get, you know,
exactly, because that's the protocol, right?
Absolutely. And this is after 9,000 games in the Premier League where they had no problem with goal line technology whatsoever. So specifically, they had an explanation. They said that they have, you know, a range of different kinds of cameras set up on different angles. And this situation was so unique with respect to how the goalkeeper was placed, the attacker and the defender, and the particular angle at which this particular camera was trying to see. And from this one camera, which was apparently the primary camera, that camera could not see if the ball had cleared the line or not, and hence did not give the alert on the watch for the referee to call the goal. And I'm actually glad that despite how big this blunder is, they came out pretty clean and said, look, this is what's happened. And we are extremely apologetic, and we apologize to, you know, the Premier League, to Sheffield, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know. I mean, I just hope it doesn't come to bite them back in the ass, because, you know, United drew, Spurs drew, Arsenal are a mess. So I think Sheffield are not doing too badly and might just scrape through the Europa League qualification. So no one's worse for wear, really, I hope.
Well, technically Sheffield is, right? It's not like they're one of the top contenders. They're a team that's punching above their weight. And
correct.
For them to maintain that position on the table, of 3 points would have just been so much more helpful, right?
Additional 2 points. They got the 1 point from the draw.
They got the 1 point. They would have been level with United on points and at 46 if that would have been the case. So it's, and then 2 points behind Chelsea in the fourth spot. So that would have helped their case tremendously. And they have Wolves and they still have Tottenham and Arsenal behind them. So they would have benefited a lot with these, I don't want to say free 3 points, but 3 points, and as opposed to getting two.
Right.
So yeah, I think that's a pretty big fail. In other news, just to recap the results that we've seen, Arsenal, like we mentioned, 2-1 Brighton loss. Watford drew to Leicester, and I'm going in descending order, or I'll go from the start. So Aston Villa Sheffield was the first game, 0-0 draw. It should have been 1-0. Manchester City decimates Arsenal, 3-0. Literally, or rather,
David Luiz
decimates Arsenal. big talk about David Luiz, whether this was his last game or whatever, and Arteta is reinforcing that he's fine. Arsenal fans have always, like, especially during the season, they've been feeling it so harsh. And then to have your first two games just end in such heartbreaking fashion for different, completely different reasons is, I mean, Arsenal fans are, they know how to absorb, man. They were like Spurs yesterday against United. They know how to absorb. And then hopefully they'll be able to counter quick and win something. So just coming back to it, they got decimated 3-0 by City. City looked on point. City looked as if they had not taken 3 months off. Especially the first, I would say, like literally like 60 to 70 minutes of the game, they were on point. Added Aguero in later, fresh legs and on point. Like they looked really, really sharp and pretty scary, to be honest. Then we had Norwich-Southampton. Southampton won 3-0. They had a change of captain as well during this break. Tottenham United 1-1. Watford-Leicester 1-1. So you mentioned Ben Chilwell. Ben Chilwell ended up scoring in the 90th minute, and Craig Dawson ended up scoring in the 93rd minute in this game.
Yep.
So
yep.
Literally no action for 90 minutes, and then two goals in the span of four.
Right.
And I didn't watch this game, but you said Ben Chilwell had a beauty of a goal, didn't he?
Yeah. So if Leicester were demanding 70 million for him, I think after this match, they're going to ask for triple digits. No, I mean, Chilwell had a good game. He spent majority of his time up front, and it was a good game overall. I think for Leicester, it just sucks that they had to concede the way they did. It was a pretty good goal, but Schmeichel had a great game, a lot of saves. Yeah, and everyone else seemed to do, you know, okay for a first game, but that goal was just insane. It just, yeah, it was beautiful.
I cannot wait to watch it. And in other news, La Liga has been back as well. We have had multiple games now where it's the La Liga table is so weirdly balanced right now. It's kind of like the Italian league table as well. So currently, Barcelona have a game in hand, are a game ahead, and they're 3 points ahead only. So Real Madrid have one game in hand, and they're at 62. So if they win the next game, then they go level on points with Barcelona at 65, which is going to be so much fun.
Right.
And then beyond that, it's, Sevilla's at 52 points, Atletico's at 49, Getafe's 47. It becomes close with that 3-2 sort of 8-9 spot where it becomes really close. But at the top, if Real win their next game, they're going to be level on points with Barcelona, which is going to be pretty interesting. And they had a pretty good game. I think Eden Hazard is playing. Hazard is kind of back. Marco Asensio is gone, is back. I'm really glad about it. I really missed him.
Absolutely.
I love him as a player.
Yeah.
And Karim Benzema is now I want to say, the fifth top Real Madrid scorer in its history, which is great. Great job. Other than that, the Italian league did not start, but the Coppa Italia happened.
Oh, yes. That was a lot of fun. All these.
Was it?
I mean, was it fun? I mean, just the fact that what we're leading up to, I think it's super ironic because we did this for Timo Werner and sealing his Chelsea transfer. So that was a lot of fun. And then this just doesn't sound as much fun for a UA fan. So I'm just a happy camper to see how it all unfolds.
So you find happiness in my misery is the point. So just for anyone who's not clued in, the Italian Federation decided to start the footballing season with the Coppa Italia semifinals and final, before which they jumped to the league. I don't care. It is a trophy, so I kind of do care. But to literally have the first game back for footballers being a semifinal knockout game, because the first leg's already happened, and then trade the second game as a final, which no extra time, just at a time and then straight to penalties. I'm sour because Juve lost the final, if it's not clear enough. So Juve played Milan in the semis, and Napoli played Inter in the other semi, and Juve and Napoli ended up coming through. And extremely drab affair. In fact, one highlight of the entire game was Gigi Buffon looked like Gigi Buffon from like 10 years ago. He looked like David De Gea when Louis van Gaal was at Manchester United. Basically the only person getting 3 points or 1 point. Otherwise, the team just looked horrible. The entire team looked like they were playing practice games. Ronaldo looked not sharp at all. In fact, over the course of those two games, he had 2 to 3 chances, which were like, oh, Ronaldo can shoot, score these with his eyes closed, and they were just muffled or they didn't have the power. And then obviously come penalty shootout, it's such a coin toss that, yeah, whatever. I think Danilo fired his penalty over the bar, and it wasn't a good look for Juve. So they ended up losing their first trophy game for the season. And that's a weird situation for Sarri to be in, because the team's not clicking. It's not going to work. It's not working out too well. And if they have a deficit against Lyon in the first leg of the Champions League round, if they end up losing the Champions League and don't come first in the league because they're only a point ahead of Lazio, he's out for sure. He's going to require a lot from this team to be able to survive and get to next season. Because whenever you look at Juve playing optically, it just feels like something key is missing. Even though they have such a great roster, and this is even pre-Corona times as well, they have such a great roster that you would expect them to be playing at a much higher level, but they're kind of barely scraping through. So yeah, that in a nutshell is where Juve's at. And why we're talking about this is because, like last episode where we discussed our Chelsea team of the 2000s, we are going to be discussing our Juve team of the 2000s. So Shreyas, I gave you the courtesy of going first.
Right.
Because it was a Chelsea team.
Right.
So I will be going first. Deal with it. So just to reiterate how we're doing this is, we picked our favorite manager for the team from the past 20 years. And we've kind of molded our team around how that manager sets up their team, except we can fill in the players from not any era, but in the past 20 years. So for example, just as a small example, Alessandro Del Piero never played again under Allegri. But if Allegri is my manager, I can still have Del Piero in that team. So that's kind of how it works.
Right.
So Shreyas, I know it's kind of between only three managers. Two, really, if you think about it, it's between Conte and Allegri, maybe Marcello Lippi, if you're an old school fan. So I ended up picking Conte. Are you surprised about that?
Nope.
Okay, then.
I went Conte too.
Oh, you went Conte too. Okay. I feel like I kind of knew you'd go Conte because of the Chelsea link, but if you look at like success and all of that, I think there's a good case to be made for Allegri, but I picked Conte because I just really liked how he is such a big part of Juve's success right now. And he kind of revitalized this team and brought it into the 2010s, and it's never looked back. So yeah, I picked Conte, and because it's Conte, it's going to be a three at the back team. And essentially, it's going to be a 3-5-2, more or less, which is what Conte kind of likes to do mostly, with some wing-back action and then maybe two forwards playing together or one forward playing in front of the other. So no surprises for the goalkeeper. It's Gigi Buffon, because literally there has been no other goalkeeper in the 2000s. So it would be absurd if we have... I guess, but not really, though, right? So that's that. And then because it's three at the back, I have two of them from the current generation, Chiellini and Bonucci. I think these guys are massive. And that's high praise, because this is Juventus. This is an Italian team, and defense, especially center backs, is where these guys shine. So if we look at like a Juventus team all time, most likely, maybe these guys won't be featuring in it. Like, I won't be surprised if they won't be. But they've just been so good, so good and so consistent that I had to have them in the team. You might have picked Barzagli as your third as well, but I went a different direction. I went with this old school Italian defender. It's kind of a legend at Juventus. His name is Ciro Ferrara. Really good defender, dude. Like, he might actually feature in Juventus' best all-time defense. Like, I really liked him. And he played, I want to say, till maybe about 2005 or 2006. He actually ended up playing somewhere else as well, and then retired pretty late into his career. So I think now he's a coach, but fantastic defender, awesome positioning, great game sense, and just those typical, you know, pedigree Italian center backs. Would have loved to see him play in the common sort of system, in the current system, sorry. So those are my three at the back, Ferrara, Chiellini, and Bonucci. As my left wing back, I have Alexandro.
Interesting.
Yeah, I have Alexandro because it's kind of underrated how much he's given to this team and done for this team. He's played at a very, very high level for a very long time now. And he's just great in that left back, left wing back position. He's done it all. He's achieved it all. Massive number of trophies with Juventus. So I'm pretty happy to have him on this team. As my right wing back, this is a little unconventional, but kind of works if you look at it. It's Gianluca Zambrotta.
I love.
And this guy is so good. But he's primarily right back, so this kind of works. I think this is just before he went to Barcelona as well. So he's kind of playing at a very, very high level.
Yes.
So I have him as my right center, right wing back. CDM is the one that tore me apart the most, dude. Like, I could not for the life of me nail down who my CDM needed to be.
Uh-huh.
And it's just something that I could not get like a proper sort of like logic in terms of which person to go with.
Mm-hmm.
I finally ended up going with Pirlo, and that's mostly because Pirlo, once he came to Juve, is when he actually played this style of CDM. Whereas at Milan, he was still playing somewhat attacking, not sort of being this midfield general who would dictate the game. He was mostly a big part of it, but nothing relied on him as an important outlet for the midfield or the game to progress. So I think Pirlo at Juventus is a sort of special player. Pirlo has always been a special player, but when he was at Juventus, and especially under Conte, he was in this vein of form which perfectly sort of intersected with what the team wanted from him. So I think he did a great job. My other competitor for CDM was obviously Edgar Davids. And right. I gave the edge to Pirlo over Davids because if we're discussing the 2000s, then that's 4 years of Davids' career.
Right.
Although he was still at his peak, he was still playing really, really well at a really high level, went on to play for Barcelona, Inter, Spurs, Ajax, et cetera, after that. But I think what Pirlo did and what he brought to that key team, and this being a Conte team, I think Pirlo just edges Davids out. And then the next player who I'm about to mention would always, because being a box-to-box midfielder, would always provide assistance to Pirlo if needed in that midfield. And that player is Arturo Vidal. Again, there are so many other players who could have come in here, but I just feel like Vidal, what he did for that Juve team, especially under Conte, very, very underrated. if you just look at a top level view of Vidal, he probably just feels like a rampaging bull who might not have enough footballing sense to make it matter, but he is so good. He is so underrated and so good. It's a pity the way he's being used at Barcelona. I understand because Barcelona has so much quality, but he's not going to get 90 minutes to play there. But he's such a great player, or he was at least when he was at Juve. It's kind of scary as an opposition to face him, because defensively and on offense, he was equally good. And he was equally present, which is more important. He was not one to shy away from running back or running forward. So if cover needs to be provided to a Pirlo, you know Vidal's going to be around somewhere there to make sure it happens. So I think he deserves to be in this team. And the other midfielder obviously is a shoe-in to any team in the world. It's Pavel Nedved. I mean, oh my yes. God, what a player. What yep. a player. I'm just so upset that the likes of Nedved and how good they were and how effective they were get swept under the rug. Like, if you're talking about a Zinedine Zidane, fine, it's understandable because he's a different kind of player, and it's optically more pleasing to watch Zinedine Zidane than Pavel Nedved, because Pavel Nedved was more of the marauding sorts.
Right.
But just the impact you have on the football field, and fine, Pavel Nedved didn't win that magical Champions League or wasn't part of a magical Galacticos team. But if Nedved would have been in Real Madrid, he would be recognized as one of the best midfielders to have ever lived. Such a right. good player, and so important for that Juventus team. And I'm just glad he's part of the hierarchy right now. So that's my five in the midfield. Sandro, Nedved, Pirlo, Vidal, and Zambrotta. Front two, I think, is a kind of a no-brainer. Don't worry, I don't have Cristiano Ronaldo in here, even though it's just... I have David Trezeguet as my center forward.
Uh-huh.
Great player. And I have Del Piero as, well, wherever he wants to go, because that was his specialty. You put him in the front and he'll figure it out. He was, for about 6 or 7 years, he was so good at that, what we now know as the right or the left wing position, where he would cut in and put that FIFA curler inside the thing. That started to be known as the Del Piero goal.
Right.
And now we see almost everyone shooting it. And then he had a bad injury end of the 90s and sort of retooled his game and came back stronger, not as ever, but still to the level that he's scoring 20 goals a season and giving like 8-10 assists a season. So this guy can be thrown in anywhere. He knows Trezeguet is the point man. He'll make sure he's flying around, partnering with Nedved, partnering with the Sandro. I would have loved to see the same play. So yeah, that's my Juventus team of the 2000s. What do you think?
It's pretty interesting. Nothing so necessarily out of the ordinary, but yeah, I think one or two surprises. But overall, I'm pretty happy with what I have.
Okay, so let's hear it.
Yep. So as usual, it's extremely attack focused. So I'm going to be extremely vulnerable without the ball. But then my coach is Conte, so I hope he can drill the necessary defensive drills and capabilities in this team. So let's go. Goalkeeper, no-brainer, has to be Buffon. This is in a 3-5-2, which is why Conte. And also, I think, otherwise also, I just believe that the effect that Conte has on a team that's not down and out, but a team that's somewhat trying to reinvigorate or sort of just emphasize that their stamp on, you know, right. some sort of authority of style of football, of players, of winning the league. I think what Conte did with Juventus was just really cool. And to combine that with the players that he had at his disposal is just insane. So, yeah, it has to be Conte. And the three at the back, I have two... the B and C from the BBC. I have Bonucci as right center back. I have Chiellini as left center back, and I have Fabio Cannavaro as center back.
I knew it.
I think just because of the fact that, you know, he moved on to Real and he's been the only defender, I think, in the last 20 years to win the Ballon d'Or. Van Dijk came super close this year, but I mean, Chiellini has been, I think he's almost been like an unsung hero. He's made a couple of the UEFA team of the seasons. I think the two finals that Juve lost, Bonucci is I think extremely underrated from outside of Italy or Juventus fans. I think he's a great ball playing central defender. I think he was the best amongst the BBC. 100%. So these guys just had to be there. Now to compensate for the defense, I have a double pivot, and I have Vidal and Edgar Davids. I think both of them are just absolute machines and monsters running up and down. I know Vidal's more attuned to being that box to box, doing the nasty, and just to have another machine, in Edgar Davids to partner. This pivot is almost scary. So I hope that takes care of the lack of defensive cover. In front of them, I have a three, and this three is not, two guys out on the wing and one guy in the center. No, it's a relatively narrow three, and it's because of the players that I have. I have Zizou in the center, a little number 10, super attacking mid, doing his thing. And I know he was there for just a year after 2000, but it's his game and his class and his everything at Juventus that made him who he is. The 98 World Cup win, the 2000 Euro win, all of that was during his Juventus time, and then obviously he seals his transfer to Madrid. So I think that 1 year in which you rightly backed up as well, like even that last year was a really freaking good year for Juve.
Yeah.
So he's the tip of my three. Giving him or rather helping him in his mastery are Pogba and Nedved.
Pogba. So,
yeah, I mean, just just seeing yesterday's game and seeing Pogba do his thing just reinforced why I wanted to see him, on my team, is because we know the story of how he was not supposedly given enough chances under Ferguson, and he was sold for dirt cheap to Juventus, and obviously Juventus being doing their thing with these transfers and stuff, they bag these insane players at either free or dirt cheap. And I think Pogba just realized that world class level. And just think of the players he was surrounded with. He had Pirlo, and he had the defenders. He had these guys playing up front. He had Vidal and stuff. So, I mean, that is just a perfect platform to just realize yourself. And I've seen a lot of him play for Juve. And it's not about he was so effective or he was so good. He was freaking having fun. He would do stuff that maybe wasn't effective for an assist or a goal, but he was just entertaining his teammates, probably entertaining his opponents, because they'd sit back and applaud and appreciate what he's doing. And he would show up when things would matter with the assists and the goals and just his overall play. So I think he is a master and has the potential to be world class, and it's just really sad what's gone on at United. But whatever little I did see of him at Juventus, we saw he can do similar things, at national level. So it's there. It's definitely there. And I think that warrants a place in my team for sure.
Interesting. And then who do you have up front?
Up front, exactly the same as you. I mean, there's no way. Yeah, there's no way. I mean, no one even comes close to these two guys. I mean,
we had Alvaro Morata at some point.
Yeah, I mean...
I hear you, dude. I don't think from a forward position, unless Ronaldo stays for two more years and scores like 40 goals each season, I don't think anyone comes close in terms of legacy and skill and just impact.
Exactly. I remember Trezeguet being transferred to Juventus led to Inzaghi leaving. So that was a big deal, because Inzaghi obviously went on to do great things at Milan and stuff, but... people almost wrote Trezeguet off, and he was just like this villain-like character because, such a great player, and this guy supposedly nobody, wasn't even particularly first team France. And this guy, I whatever I knew of Juventus back then was early 2000s, was in the Champions League, and I saw these guys in the semis, I saw them in the knockouts, and it was a pleasure to see. And then I saw a lot of the same Italians in the 2006 World Cup, and Del Piero and Trezeguet were just untouchable. I mean, they almost had like this sense of telepathy, which was just beautiful to watch.
I agree, dude. Yeah, Del Piero Trezeguet was great. I like your team. I think that's pretty solid. I think the ones that threw me off were Cannavaro, someone I considered pretty strongly as well. It's just the fact that he was only there for 2 years. And
he didn't he come back he, after in 2009?
After like barely a season. But he left when the whole scandal happened and Juve got demoted.
Right.
So he was one of the players. I think Vieira was one of the bigger players who left as well. He was
right.
He literally only come to Juve for a season and then the thing happened and then he left. So that's a big reason why I didn't end up choosing him. And to me, Ferreira is as good. If Cannavaro would have stayed on in Juve and would have been a Juve player,
right,
then I would actually have been in a very tough pickle and I would have probably removed either one of Chiellini or Bonucci, which just goes to say how great a player Fabio Cannavaro was. And Zizou, obviously, for the reasons you mentioned, just a year in the scope of the period that we're discussing. So that's the only reason I didn't have him be in there. Otherwise, legend for the team as well. And obviously, overall as well. Pretty interesting team, dude. I think this has been a fun exercise to do this. We should do this for other teams as well.
Absolutely. This is more fun than Chelsea. I hate to say it, but yeah.
No, I think maybe like increasing the scope of time as well would be a pretty interesting exercise, because not limiting ourselves to the 2000s, but also like the 90s maybe or something like that. But it would be interesting. And then doing this for other teams would be pretty much a lot of fun too. So yeah, that's our episode. And happy to have football back. And we're probably missing a couple of games that are going on right now. And fantasy football's back. All the leagues are back, barring, I think all the top five ones are back, barring French. And it's just a pretty interesting time for sports, because usually this is the month or the next few months are the months where it's a big lull, especially in terms of football. So to have football back with a bang for these 2 months, it's pretty heartening to see. And
let me correct you there. 2020 June, July was supposed to be Euro. So
that is true. That is a fair point. But that's great. We have 2021 Euro.
And 2022 World Cup, so that's gonna be fun too.
That's fun. So yeah, looking at the brighter side of things. So yeah, that was our episode. Let us know what you guys thought of our teams as well as everything else that we discussed. If you have any thoughts, you can reach us at Munches Podcast on Instagram, and we'll catch you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.